Okay, we'll get started here in a couple seconds. Everyone can mosey on in. Okay, well, that was an attentive class. Thank you. Okay, so welcome again to another week of hopefully interesting conversation. I think we'll maybe start getting some debate here as we get a little farther in. My goal this week is to get through some of the complete the free exercise clause and start a blend into the First Amendment's freedom of speech. And there'll be some points where they come together, so we'll naturally use that to bridge one into the other, because you'll have a lot of issues where the freedom of religion and the freedom of speech collide. And that's where will be the focal point of today's lesson. So let's pray and we'll get started. Heavenly Father, thank you for giving us the freedom here today to gather and study your word and our laws. Lord, please bless the conversation today. Help it to be profitable. We ask all these things in your son Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so last week we learned several key points. First of all, we learned that the government cannot prevent a church from choosing its ministers. That was the Hosanna Tabor case. Good, right? All across, it was a recent case authored by Justice Roberts saying, we're not going there. We are not going to tell a church who its ministers can be. And that was a Christian school, too. So that's even better. It's a little, not directly with the church, but associated with the church. So we have some confidence there that the government will not be able to interfere with the selection of our ministers. However, the second point we studied and we ended with, the state may not be able to stop policies based on religion, but it can refuse to give a benefit. This is the Bob Jones University case, where Bob Jones had policies that the government deemed were racist. And the interesting part about that is the government admitted, we can't stop you. Okay? So in a way, Bob Jones's policies and the basis for it is fine, but obviously it was good that the government said, we're not going to send the National Guard in to stop your racist policies. I know you kind of go like that sometimes now, but in a way that's good. When we get to the cross-burning case here in a little bit, you'll be kind of have the kind of same reaction, and to kind of be careful what you wish for, it's actually kind of good that the worst the government could do to a private religious institution that practiced racist policies was to take away their tax exemption. And that's what I kind of proposed at the end of last week, was I think right now that's the worst a government could do to a religious institution. They don't have the power to send the National Guard in and regulate speech, or, as I joked, drag Ray away if he's preaching that certain lifestyles are sinful. They could, possibly in the future. The climate's gotten a little better now, but who knows, 20, 30 years from now, say, okay, if you preach that, marriage is between a man and a woman only and anything else is a sin, we're going to take away your tax exemption. They're not going to come in and tell you that you can and cannot do it. There's hundreds of years of Supreme Court precedent. I think they'd really have to do a radical departure from that. So that's good, that that's as far as the government has been able to go. And Bob Jones is 40 years old, and they still haven't been able to touch it. And I say this all the time to folks. A lot of people come to me concerned, like, well, what happens? Are they going to tell us what we can say inside our churches? They say it a lot, right? Are they going to tell us that we can't go out and preach the gospel and say that certain acts are a sin? And I say, listen, if they had the ability to do that, they long since would have silenced the KKK and the Aryan Nation and the Westboro Baptist Church. But, you still have people out there that you're allowed to go on the street, right, if you properly permit it. Look at Charlottesville. You guys remember Charlottesville a year and a half ago? You're allowed to go out and say racist things on the street, and they haven't been able to stop that. They can't stop it because the Constitution allows it. So I think that gives us I know I hate to associate it with it, but I know some people are worried about it. I think that gives us some comfort that you're going to be able to go out and preach the gospel on the street and preach the gospel in your church and preach what is sin and isn't sin in your church and preach what is sin and isn't sin in the street if we haven't been able to stop the KKK. Art. What we're going to talk about, that's the exact next point. We're going to talk about the finer details of a public, a private church, a private club, somebody that opens their doors for business to the public. Okay? So let's go into some of the, and that's my third review point there. The freedom is subject to more scrutiny the farther you get away from the church. Okay? The church itself is pretty sacrosanct. I think we're hundreds of years away from anybody telling us what we can say inside our churches. But as you get farther away, a Christian school, maybe a ministry, a nonprofit, Hobby Lobby, and a public company.
Can I use the IRS to hassle?
Well, it's the definition of what hassle is. In this case, the IRS said, you're not getting your tax exemption. I'd take hassling over having to pay millions of dollars, but essentially, yes.
In other words, can they tie you up to the point that your tax bills become?
Well, no, they can't treat you differently than anybody else as far as the procedural things go, as far as filing regulations and timing. No, they can't do that based on your religion, but they can take away just a line item benefit. Say, no, you're not a 501c3 anymore. We're not going to treat you that way. And that's as simple as checking a box. I mean, there's no math in that. Well, the IRS can audit anybody at any time. Yes, it's tough to stop them. I deal with DOL audits all the time. You really can't stop them. You can delay them. But if you cooperate with them, it's really not a big deal. It's possible. All right, so we're going to talk about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 1993, signed by the Democratic Congress and the Democratic President. Imagine that. It's hilarious. 93. The Democrats, you know, this is before the Republican takeover of Congress in 94. So the Democrats decided to sign the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And why was it necessary? Okay. First of all, there was a very critical decision in the Supreme Court in 1990 called Employment Division versus Smith. And that changed a whole lot of things. Now, the issue at Smith was that the state of Oregon outlawed the use of several drugs, of course, which they're allowed to, including peyote, which is a drug smoked by Native Americans, and they do it as part of their religious ceremonies, okay? And these guys were on state land. They weren't on their reservation, obviously. On their reservation, it becomes a whole other thing. But so they were denied employment benefits because they were fired for using peyote, and so it just became a general issue, is could the state of Oregon ban a drug that could be used in a religious ceremony? What's anybody's thought on that? Should this, if, you know, we don't really use any drugs in our religious ceremonies, but, I mean, I'm not going to question what the Native Americans' religion is, nor should I. I don't think it's right, but, you know, what their policy is, and obviously for centuries they've used some sort of hallucinogens in their religious ceremony. Should they be allowed to use it? Elizabeth. Well, they were using peyote, which is why they lost their jobs.
Right, but I just thought that figured in the fact that they were in a position to encourage people from using.
That was the minor issue. The major issue, though, was that the Supreme Court in this case completely changed 100 years of precedent with one case. Because they used to say if it has a general law has an effect on affecting one practice, it's probably unconstitutional, but in 1990 they changed it. It says if it's a general law of general application and it just so happens to prohibit a religious practice, it's not unconstitutional. So that caused a lot of concern.
Did this come up at all
Not to the point that it made it to the Supreme Court. And they had bigger problems with prohibition, which is why they took it out rather quickly. It never made it to the Supreme Court. But there were some exceptions granted for religious uses by the courts. But it never reached this kind of level. And it was kind of odd because people think, all right, some Indians want to smoke peyote while they do their service. Who cares? Well, they were denied employment benefits because they were fired for using the peyote. So this, you know, usually takes a minor little issue and suddenly you have a big issue in the Supreme Court. So suddenly the Supreme Court says it doesn't matter what the law says. It doesn't matter what your religious beliefs are. If the law is a general application, the atheists can't use peyote. You can't use peyote if you just want to do it to feel good. And you can't use it for your religious ceremony. So that started to cause some concern. Contrast that with... these are great. I remember these cases talking in law school. They're so interesting. The Church of Lukuma Bablu Ai Inc. What do you think the issue was in that case? Take a guess. Anybody? Yes. Animal sacrifice. So the state of Arizona passed a law that said you cannot sacrifice animals, right? Okay. Now, what's the difference there? You can't use peyote, you can't sacrifice animals. What's the difference? Calvin. It's targeting a specific religious practice. No matter how much we might you don't want to sacrifice animals, but if you're following, you could read the Old Testament and there's some, if you're not a Messianic Jew, you might want to participate in sacrifice. So, they said you can't sacrifice animals, and the same court, just 2 years after that, said, no, you can't prohibit animal sacrifice. But you can prohibit the smoking of peyote because of the way it was targeted. They specifically targeted the religious act of sacrificing animals. Obviously, you could hunt all you want and slit a deer's throat, bleed it out, and cook it, and do whatever. But if you do that as part of a religious ceremony, it's illegal. So the Supreme Court noticed that. But someone else actually noticed that too, and that was the Democrats in Congress. Imagine that. So civics quiz. What are the two ways that the Supreme Court can be overruled? Constitutional amendment, or Congress can just write a law saying you were wrong. Now, there is some bar. If the Supreme Court rules on an issue of straight constitutional interpretation, like Roe versus Wade, you would probably need a constitutional amendment to overturn it. But in Smith, where they said that the First Amendment does laws of general application do not apply and still can restrict religious practices, Congress reacted to that with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And Congress can do that. They've done it several times. They say, we are going to overturn the Supreme Court, and they could do that. They could say, we're putting back what was called the strict scrutiny standard. Okay, no more general application. If something is going to infringe on a religious belief, then that statute had better be very specific and have what's called a compelling government interest. If you read Hobby Lobby, you heard that a lot. So in 1993, the federal government passed a law which overturned Supreme Court precedent and said made it much easier for religious freedom. There was a debate, and there still is a debate, and the Supreme Court said 2 years later after that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act doesn't apply to the states because Congress can't control the states, which is why you see a lot of states try to pass their own Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Remember Mike Pence did it in Indiana. So the states realize that we're going to have to do this individually because the federal government this is only having to do with federal government laws. Which brings us to Hobby Lobby. Most people say one of the more important cases of the last 100 years. Okay, Hobby Lobby. What? All right, I'm going to ask some questions now. What was the issue in Hobby Lobby? Lauren. Right. So, Hobby Lobby, this all has to do with Obamacare and the mess of the 11,000 pages that nobody has actually read, including Nancy Pelosi, apparently. Nobody's actually read Obamacare. They just slapped it together and says, well, that's good. We'll pass that. Nobody actually read it, so once it was passed, and people were like, well, how is this actually going to apply? And they started reading it, like, huh, okay, well, okay, all contraceptives, even before or after conception, are covered. All right, well, that's going to be a problem, so let's craft a slight exception, a half exception for religious institutions. So they did that because they knew they were going to get hammered in the courts. But there was an issue, and this was the Geneva College and Little Sisters of the Poor case, where it wasn't really quite clear. Yeah, they didn't have to provide it, but they might have ended up backdoor having to fund it. So that case was litigated a while, back and forth, up and down. At the same time, the owners of Hobby Lobby, okay, who are as far away from the church as you can get, they're a for-profit corporation, right? Okay, remember I said the farther you get away from the church, the less protection you can anticipate. And they said, well, wait a minute here. Just because I'm a for-profit corporation, does that mean I lose my religious freedoms? And that essentially was the main issue in Hobby Lobby that the Supreme Court had to decide, is can Hobby Lobby as a private corporation get excused from this requirement under Obamacare? What was the government? Do you remember what the government's argument was? Anybody recall what the Obamacare lawyers were trying to say? Tim? They did attack the corporation status. But what's the one thing that you always do if you're trying to make an exception? What's the argument that they always will? And Ginsburg cited this in her dissent. It's the old slippery slope. They'll say, well, if we allow this to happen, a private corporation, then we'll start getting private corporations saying, well, we don't want to follow Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which prohibits racial and gender discrimination because of religious grounds. So there was actually a lot of surprise when this came out. Okay, some of the issues here. Here is what the actual issue was. This is coming right from the court's opinion. Although many of the required FDA-approved methods of contraception work by preventing the fertilization of an egg, four of those methods, those specifically at issue in this case, may have the effect of preventing an already fertilized egg from developing any further by inhibiting its attachment to the uterus. So, where's Danny? This is the kind of stuff, Justice Kennedy didn't write this. He had one of his law clerks research this. And then when we read Planned Parenthood versus Casey in a couple weeks, that's like a lesson in obstetrics. So they get pretty detailed in a good way and sometimes in a bad way. But so they really analyzed here. They took it apart here. It's like, okay, this is their religious belief. If it stops conception, okay. If it terminates the embryo after conception, obviously that's a problem. Now, of course, there's many folks that would argue that any type of contraceptive is morally against the religious beliefs, and they can make a good argument for that. You know, whether you agree with it or not, they can make a good argument for that. So even if they had a moral objection, the problem was that Obamacare had this, and I actually did a couple lectures on this. It's very confusing. They could have been facing like a $4 million penalty, or it could have been less if they just, their other option was, just so you know, they could have just stopped offering health care insurance to all their employees and paid a $2,000 per year employee penalty. And I always argued that that was an okay alternative, and the government tried to argue that too, but Hobby Lobby successfully argued, well, wait a minute, I can now offer my employees health care because of this. If you're forcing me to have it all or nothing. And when smaller employers have asked me this question, a small lady that ran a dry cleaner, she says, I don't want to support abortion. I was like, well, they just drop health care. It just makes it, and actually ended up being cheaper for her, smaller. But the big one like Hobby Lobby, it became an issue. Okay, so let me ask you this question, and this is going to start blending in a little bit into our study about abortion in a couple weeks. Do you think that we as Americans have a constitutional right to access contraceptives? Put your moral thing aside. I see some frowny faces, but ooh boy, you have no idea how important this question is. No constitutional right to access contraceptives. So a state can ban a woman's access to contraceptives. Do you believe? I'm just saying that's your. Well, the Bill of Rights is the Constitution. Yeah, they're one, an amendment is part of the Constitution de facto, as if it was there from the beginning. Well, the Bill of Rights are amendments. They're amendments 1 through 10 that were passed immediately at the same time that the Constitution was passed. And then going forward, you amend the Constitution via the amendment process as opposed to actually changing the actual language. Denny?
Isn't there a difference between Medicare paying for contraceptives as opposed to someone going out and purchasing contraceptives
My question is, should, because this is an issue here, should the state be able to ban the sale of all contraceptives, even to married women?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. I'm going to hold you to that in a couple weeks. you know what the slippery slope is? The slippery slope leads to Roe. All right. So in Hobby Lobby, it was a 5-4 decision, and Justice Kennedy was on the side of religion, so you know it's important. You know, like, well, okay, this is going to be something that is radical, and it changed things greatly. One of the quotes I wanted to read you from his opinion, which kind of summarizes really our class in general, this is one of the things Kennedy said that we were dealing with. The Hans and Greens, these are owners of the companies, believe that providing coverage demanded by the HHS regulations is connected to the destruction of an embryo in a way that is sufficient to make it immoral for them to provide the coverage. This belief implicates a difficult and important question of religion and moral philosophy, namely the circumstances under which it is wrong for a person to perform an act that is innocent in itself, but has the effect of enabling or facilitating the commission of an immoral act by another. Now that's pretty deep stuff from Justice Kennedy there. And he's like, okay, yeah, paying for your insurer's health care, employee's health care is not in and of itself immoral, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 steps down the line, you might be the point where you're terminating a fertilized egg. And that's why being a Supreme Court justice is not an easy job, in case you were wondering. They have to deal with pretty heavy issues like this. So in a decision that just shocked everybody across the legal world, they sided with Hobby Lobby and said that for-profit corporations, so this means, you know, everyone, you're going from the churches, now the protection reaches all the way out to for-profit corporations. They're protected by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And a government then has to prove a substantial and compelling government interest to take away their religious freedom. And in this case, they weren't able to do it because there was like millions of ways, because Obamacare pays for everything anyway. Then like they figured out, all right, well, yeah, Obamacare admitted, well, yeah, we can actually pay for it. The government can actually pay for it. And fine, the government's going to end up paying for it. And you, the Hobby Lobby, and anybody that doesn't want to actually get charged will not get charged for it. They have to go on a secondary subsidy. Denny?
Didn't that decision also include comments about the closely held corporation?
Yeah, whether it's for-profit or closely held, yeah, that's why it was.
I think the idea was that all people have stock in that religion.
Well, that made it easier to determine a closely held religious belief. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to tell what AT&T's closely held religious beliefs are, just by the sheer fact. But this one, it was easy because there was only the family owned it. So it was easy to make a statement. But like I know, you know, the company, the construction company I do work for, they're all owned by Christians, so it's really easy to know. Go ahead. Well, it depends on if it's easy to identify what the majority owners of the corporation, who they are, that's fine. But if you're a publicly traded company, it makes it a little harder, obviously. Yeah, the owners of the company have to be able to prove that they have a sincerely held religious belief. And they almost just discounted it here. Like, yeah, we agree it's a sincerely held religious belief that they believe that post-conception termination is immoral. But yeah, it would get in a somewhat esoteric, like how do you prove if there's 100 owners, whether or not it's an exception or not. Which is why, you know, whenever you come before a public company, it's kind of hard to control who your owners are. Art. Yeah, well, I mean, there's an argument that atheism is a religion, and sometimes in apologetics you argue that. Like, you're believing in something, you're just not believing what I believe. You're not an atheist. You have as much faith as I do, but faith in something that you're having faith that it's not there, where I have faith that it is there. But atheism is considered, there's plenty of cases that say atheists are protected under religious freedom, religion or lack of a religion. So I think they could absolutely appeal to that, and God willing, maybe they will. Okay. All right, everyone wants to talk about wedding cakes, I know. All right, I'm going to read from 1 Corinthians 10, 23 through 33 to get us started on this issue. I called it conscience versus civil rights. This will be a very familiar passage to most people. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. Eat whatever is sold in a meat market, asking no questions for conscience' sake, for the earth is the Lord's and all its fullness. If any of those who do not believe invite you to dinner, and you desire to go, eat whatever is set before you, asking no questions for conscience' sake. But if anyone says to you, this was offered to idols, do not eat it. For the sake of the one who told you and for conscience sake, for the earth is the Lord and all that is, and all its fullness. Conscience, I say, not your own, but that of the other. For why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? But if I partake with thanks, why am I evil spoken of for the food over which I give thanks? Therefore, whatever you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense either to the Jews or to the Greeks or to the church of God, just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Okay, Christian liberty, conscience, and now the government is coming in. All right, masterpiece bakers. All right, what was the issue in the case? Lauren. Okay. Anybody else have any initial comments on what the issue was? Tim. And that's the good and bad part about this case. When this came out, everyone said, oh, it's a win. They're like, uh-oh, it's 7-2. That's not good. Kagan was on our side. That's not good. And Breyer was on our side. Uh-oh, something's coming. You know, because everyone said this is going to be 5-4 either way. And when they came out 7-2, we were like, that's probably not going to be exactly what we want. So what happened here, here's the law in question. I'm just going to read the law and tell me whether or not you think there's anything wrong with the law. This is from the Colorado statute. It is a discriminatory practice and unlawful for a person directly or indirectly To refuse, withhold from, or to deny an individual or group because of disability, race, creed, color, sex, sexual orientation, marital status, national origin, or ancestry, the full and equal enjoyment of the goods, services, facilities, privileges, advantages, or accommodation of a public, of a place of public accommodation. That was the Colorado state law at issue right there, word for word, okay? And that mirrors a lot of other state laws, except, you know, 50 years ago, they added in race and color, and 10 to 20 years ago, they added in sexual orientation, and maybe even gender. And this is a place of public accommodation. So you are a Christian, and you set up a business, and you say it's a public accommodation. Anybody can come in. All right. Do you agree that you would be subject to the state's laws regarding who you can serve and not serve? Right. What? Go ahead, David. Well, I'm talking, that's going to be, see, the problem is they didn't really make the decision in Masterpiece and in the case 2 weeks ago. So I'm talking in general terms, is as a Christian, do you think, if you agree to open up a place of public accommodation, restaurant, we'll just use a restaurant for example, do you think, for example, you should be able to use your religious beliefs to only admit white people? No. Why? Okay. Right.
But if I can't discriminate against someone as gay, or if I'm going to provide cake for them, I find that totally different than race.
Let's reel it back in from cake. Do you think that you should, if you own a restaurant, you should not allow two same-sex people to have a romantic dinner in your restaurant? Jess. That's a good question. Brandon.
Something that also perplexed me about this case is that he made this with me serving the gay couple who took the sacrament, but we would have to assume that he served people who were like a believer and a non-believer were getting married.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were giving, he made a cake for a baby shower for the families where the people weren't married or something like that. So it's not like he's not serving
sinners. Well. Right. What he said is, quote from Mr. Phillips says, I'll make you a birthday cakes, shower cakes, sell you cookies and brownies, but I won't make cakes for same-sex weddings. Okay, that was on the record of what he said. What if they came in, whether Adam and Steve came in with their a baby and says, can you make happy adoption cake? We just adopted a baby. Would you do that? I see a lot of perplexed faces. Yeah, it's tough. Brian.
Well, I
Right, and that helps if they have something written down. In Hobby Lobby, you know, the owners there had a statement of faith, which was incorporated into all their policies. So that helps prove the issue, but it still, when you open yourself up for public, you can write all the, say, we believe every word of the jot and tittle of the God's holy word, and we're going to follow it, but you still expose yourself to some government possible adverse influence when you open to the public. Brandon. Because that's not what the law says. The state legislature.
Why does the government have to be involved in it? Because if he came out and said, I don't like black people, I'm not going to serve black people, people wouldn't go to that bakery, they would close down.
There is society policing itself is one argument, but pretty much every state legislator has banned racial discrimination. The federal government has, and now, like I say, it's getting into sexual orientation. Right. Well, the contrasting case, just real quick, in Hobby Lobby was they had the, and this was the baker, his name was Jack. It was, they had a guy, he refused, someone came in and said, will you make anti-gay cakes? And he said no 4 times, and a Colorado commission says, well, you're allowed to do that because you're favoring society, right? Someone said, you know, I want to say marriage is between man and woman, put it on a cake. Yeah, and Baker said, I won't do that. And they, of course, they tossed that one out. Yeah, it was a small bake shop in Colorado. He was the sole owner. Yeah. Well, yeah, he had employees, but he was there kind of every day. It was a small bake shop. But, yeah, I mean, he could do that if he wanted. He says, you know, I'm not going to serve you. I'm going to bring my associate here, and she'll design your cake. But he didn't want his company doing that. Yeah, well, that's not the issue. It's not the issue that this couple is going to go cakeless at their wedding. I mean, come on, they're targeting and they're trying to stir up trouble. So everyone knows what the issue is. You know, someone's going to bake them a cake. That's not the issue. It's that they're trying to be on CNN. Well, that's the thing with the artistic thing, and they talked about that as like everyone knows what a wedding cake looks like. But what if, you know, Adam and Steve walked in and said, that blank cake right there, could you write that? We just got back from our honeymoon. We're having a quick reception. Could you say, happy wedding day? Just write it out in blue, you know, whatever the squeezed icing thing is. There's not really much artistic about that, and if I wrote it, it wouldn't be artistic at all. I mean, just literally type out an alphabetic word, happy anniversary or happy wedding day, Adam and Steve. I mean, that's not really celebrating. That's just putting it down. Right. Well, there's no real precedent here. That's the weird part about it is because, as Tim said, what they threw back to the Colorado Court of Appeals, and this guy's been sued again, by the way. The Supreme Court's kind of weird. They try to take a litmus. They're going to decide this issue. They're kind of weird whenever they dip their toe in and when they're going to decide it. Just like we'll talk in a couple weeks, they're going to revisit Roe versus Wade. just not, it's not ready yet. You know, they keep, you know, you see all these abortion laws are bouncing up and down, and all the states have said, we're passing these laws for the sole purpose to get a big cluster of cases to send up to the Supreme Court. So in this issue, they were like, if we have a reason to send it back without making precedent, we're going to do it. And so what they did is they said, okay, they didn't really consider the guy's religious beliefs. And what the whether you agree with this or not, one of the justices or commissioners on the Colorado's Civil Rights Commission said, freedom of religion and religion have been used to justify all kinds of discrimination throughout history. Whether it be slavery, whether it be the Holocaust, whether it be, I mean, we can list hundreds of situations where freedom of religion can be used to justify discrimination. And to me, it is one of the most despicable pieces of rhetoric that people can use to use the religion to hurt others. So he took the natural bridge, which sometimes people do, like slavery, Nazis, fundamental Christians. Dad. No, you could not. Well, that comes to the question is whether or not, yes, the company could necessarily fire me. I would have to prove that it's object against my religion to provide financial advice. And that's going to be a tough one, right? So this is where I get to the question, are there some jobs that Christians simply cannot hold? Okay, remember the famous case of the clerk of courts in Kentucky after Obergefell? She says, I'm not stamping marriage certificates, right? Okay, I'm not going to do it. All right. How many would also take that position? If you were the clerk of the court of Kentucky, that county, I forget what county it was, and all you got to do is put your stamp on it, how many would have an objection to stamping a same-sex marriage license? Okay. Don. Oh. Good. Okay, so maybe, because she made a big stink about it, and, you know, I didn't agree with a lot of stuff she said, and her theology was a little bit wonky if you actually read about her. but the issue is, you know, my premise is maybe there's some jobs that Christians just cannot do. Okay? I thought about it in the past, and it's still in the back burner, but a lot of people have always told me, Dean, why don't you become a judge? I was like, well, for one thing, it's a horrific political process. But that being said, after Obergefell, I'm a judge. What if two same-sex couples walk into my chambers and say, here's our license? What if you're a mayor of a town, right, and two same-sex people walk into your office? You know, different states are different, but basically, you know, marriage is the highest point of authority in any locale, whether it be a ship captain, a town, a judge, can marry people. That's true, they might change, but whenever a good debate that they had at, I think it might have been a Ligonier conference, I forget, but they asked some of this question, John MacArthur gave a good answer. They asked, what if I'm an architect, which on its face is very neutral, fine, nice job. I'm an architect, say there's some mid-level associate, junior partner, and my firm just landed the contract to build the biggest mosque in the city. And my partner walks in and says, here's the conceptualization. I want you to design this mosque. And you're a Christian. Okay, so that's, right? And they debated that a little bit too. It's like, because how far do you take it? You know, I have, as a lawyer once, two times I've had issues. People say this all the time. People think, how are you a lawyer and a Christian? I'm like, well, thank you. I did have, a year or so ago, I got a case in from an insurer. It was an employment case. And it was the secretary receptionist was fired, but it was, I won't say the name, but it was women's health care. And after about a week, I finally looked, I'm like, I got to look at this. So I did some research, and they provided health care to underadvantaged women. I was like, where's this going to go? But then I finally just called the CEO and just asked her. I was like, do you do abortions? And like, no, we don't do abortions. If someone wants one, we send them to somewhere else. I was like, okay. Because if they did, I wouldn't be able to represent them. So, because I just couldn't do that in my conscience. But there's different levels, you know, of conscience. Can you design a mosque? You know, can you stamp a marriage license?
Okay, so I'm here. I work retail, but I work
for a
store.
Mm-hmm. And that's your company policy, right? Right, it's your company. Okay. Well, is it similar to alcohol? If you feel someone's in danger, you can't, you're not prohibited to serve them, right? Baker, right. Well, that's to the argument of the like, you could be someone like an architect and it comes into your, right. Nathan. Go ahead. Please. Right. Jess, and I'll get Jimmy.
You act in a way that is against your faith, then yes, we need to deny that.
in any way. But then, yeah, that's kind of been covered by that.
Jamie. Dawn.
Yes, and I think the thing that Dean, when you talk about certain jobs that prisons may not be able to do, this is slippery slope, because already in Canada now, and even in parts of the United States, there are people who are writing in the New York Times or whatever saying that doctors should not, doctors who don't want to perform abortions should no longer be doctors.
Right.
Or whatever. And then, again, as I'm sure we get into Roe versus Wade, but you know, if a lot of the Democrats have their way, we'll be paying for federal abortion.
Jerry, then Lisa.
Is it ever a valid argument to say that if there's 1,000 people around the corner that'll do what you were asking me to do, but I can't do it?
Nope. That was the case. People were like arguing, like, this is ridiculous. You can always find somebody to buy you a cake. But this was one they were talking. This, there was a statute. The statute said this, and as they interpreted it, it violated the statute. Lisa. Right. Right. Yeah. And there's all kind of funny responses, and I'll wrap up here. The like, what can a Christian baker do? It's like, well, they can make for every couple that wants to come in and have a wedding, no matter who they are. Man, woman, woman, man, woman, man. You have to memorize and recite for me Genesis 2. You have to do. You could do something like that. Like, okay, all my around the cake, I'm gonna put a banner that says, you know, man and woman, one flesh. It's gonna go on everybody. Now you might lose some business, but if you treated everybody equally, you could do that. It's kind of funny. All right, we're gonna wrap up. Snap poll for next week. We didn't even get what we want to do. Snap poll. How many people think the government should ban cross burning? Hands up if you think the government should ban cross burning. Ooh. Okay, so we're gonna bleed into free speech next week, and I will send out the cross burning case because it's very important to us in the church, I think, unfortunately.